Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Are poets philosophers? Doesn't the creative moment reveal a personal truth to share? Must a poem be recited the same way every time? The spontaneous spoken word is a form of poetry that sometimes leaves the listener wondering if what is said is really spontaneous. Steve Hellman, our guest today, is a poet who lives and speaks in Mendocino County in Northern California, whose medium is the spontaneous spoken word.
We're going to do the French. What is the difference between you and me? I mean, what is going on when it's not French fries anymore, but freedom fries? What is the difference between you and me? Now, I don't understand this, that suddenly French fries have to become freedom fries, because it was always French. When did it become freedom French? Or is it freedom fries French, or French freedom, or French fries? Here it is. What is the difference between you and me? I mean, it's pretty simple. Am I supposed to be just like you? Am I supposed to be exactly what Mr. Bush wants? Am I supposed to be something other than French fries? I mean, as long as I was alive, it was always French fries. And that was fine with me, because I'm okay with French kissing and French. In fact, I studied French when I was in school, and I can speak a little je suis fatigué, okay? So I'm okay with the French. I mean, what are the French supposed to be? Are they supposed to be just like you and me? I mean, I don't get it. What is the difference between you and me?
Steve Hellman, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. It's good to be here.
So where do these spontaneous spoken words come from? I suspect that you have some plan, some intention as to where you're going.
Well, yeah, there's always some kind of kernel of truth that it comes off of. And then from there, it's just trusting in whatever comes through. It's kind of like a channeling, I guess you could say.
When did you start doing this?
This was about 20 years ago. I had a very good friend of mine, Max Schwartz, who was a genius at this sort of thing. So I kind of apprenticed with him. And he had been in southern Italy during the 60s and met some Sicilians, told them he was a poet. And they said, well, let's hear it. And he said, well, my poems are back in my truck. And they said, no, let's hear it. And he spun his first spontaneous poem there at the southern tip of Italy. And went on to be really great at it, and I picked it up from him. This was San Francisco, about 1982.
When you talk about French fries, or you talk about some of the other stories that I hope you'll tell us today, you have kind of a background. You have a point of departure and perhaps a focus. Tell us how you sharpen the focus and get the words out. What goes into that effort?
Right. There's always some kind of paradigm or dynamic that I'm working off of. For instance, in the poem I just did, What is the Difference Between You and Me? There's some kind of dichotomy at work there. In other words, there's the French fries and the freedom fries, and I just played off that. So there was a pretty simple dichotomy, and I felt myself going back and forth and then circling around the central idea of, really, is there any difference between freedom and French?
In some ways, you relate the theme to a musical theme that is repeated from time to time.
Yeah, there can be a refrain, which is kind of my way of keeping centered. The refrain's helpful because sometimes I might not know exactly what to say next, and if I come back to the refrain, it can get me centered, and it's kind of like following the center line down the highway in a blizzard.
Can you give us some examples?
Oh.
Not of following the center line in the blizzard,
right,
but of what you mean.
Well, again, the refrain, what is the difference between you and me, helped me to keep getting back to the central idea, because otherwise I'm just spinning language or images, and there has to be a core idea or some kind of cohesive thought that works for me.
Can we hear some of the other poems or the spontaneous spoken word, as you've come to call it, that I want you to tell us about after we hear a little more?
Well, yeah, sure. This time around, why don't we create a genuinely spontaneous moment and have you, Barry, give me a word and I'll do something.
Okay. How about snow in August?
Snow in August was like snow in April. I was outside in April up on the ranch when the flakes came down so big it was like a white blanket had unfolded out of the heavens. A white blanket that in its descent it came down deciding to dissimilate into a million different exactly unique crystals. A white blanket that decided to disseminate into a million different white unique crystals. What is it in nature that can accept difference and yet be universally together? What is it in nature that can be snow, where each little particle is so unique, so unbelievably different from its neighbor, and yet, as it lands all around us, snow in August? Really, is it snow in August, or is it just snow? And as snow is it something that has come down to be just what it is?
You've spoken of the spontaneous spoken word movement. I'm speaking spontaneously to you now, and you're speaking spontaneously, yet in a slightly different way.
Right. Well, what can I say? The question goes to culturally right now. If you look at, for instance, rap, hip-hop, a lot of that is from a completely spontaneous origin. These guys, these women, they'll work out their lyrics and lines in a spontaneous setting, or even when somebody writes a song that ends up not being rap, but just any kind of creative process originally comes out of something spontaneous. It's just that in this format, it remains in its spontaneous format. It never really gets written down. I don't have a poem that I've ever repeated. So this is just an initial kind of, it's like a going off. It's like a shooting out. It's like a, it's just that initial spontaneous moment, and you'd find in any creative process.
So the preservation of your work is here on Radio Curious on the digital recording that we're doing, as opposed to putting it down in a book.
Right, exactly. I'm publishing as we speak. As I do this poem, and I tell other poets, as soon as you get up and read your poetry at a mic in front of an audience, you're publishing. In effect, you're giving it to an audience and you're publishing. And so, yes, this is the format for it.
Steve, when you create the spontaneous spoken word poems, they obviously, being said by you, are going to come from some element in your personal history, your personal truths. Tell us about how they fit in or how they develop into what you say.
Well, exactly. I have found in my experience doing this kind of work that the only times that I've actually felt that I failed at it was when I tried to speak someone else's truth and create a story from it. In other words, when I've always stuck to my own truth, I somehow can't go wrong. Something's going to come together. And in that sense, my brother and I are surfers, and this one will go out to him, Jerry Hellman. We drive Highway 20 out to the coast once a week. And in the process of heading towards the ocean, my brother and I talk a lot about things spiritual and philosophical. And he's been a Buddhist now for 35 years. He's at a landmark in his life, in his Buddhist practice. And we were recently going out to the coast discussing Buddhist ideas, the idea that good and evil exist simultaneously in us, that we can't really, for a moment, think in terms of evil not being a part of us. And along those lines, as we went to the ocean, and I had just read an interview with a Brazilian model who talked about the carnival and the other festivals in Brazil, and she talked about how people go into the ocean out there to wash away the bad spirits. And along those lines, we've just had this terrible disaster in Southeast Asia where the ocean came and took away all these lives. And as my brother and I go to the ocean each week, we go to the ocean to wash away the bad spirits and to rejuvenate ourselves. And yet the ocean can also be something profoundly deadly, profoundly evil. And this place that my brother and I go, we call it Smuggler's Cove. And when you arrive at Smuggler's, you're on a cliff, you're on a bluff. And you're looking down at waves that look small in the perspective of the distance. And as you descend the bluff, we descend the bluff in our wetsuits and gear. There's a rope that the abdivers have flung down the cliff. And without the rope, you wouldn't get down. And we use the rope to get down. And it's a going down, but we need the rope. And the cliff is the way in, but the cliff is where you could also kill yourself, because the cliff is the cliff. And as we get to the water, we stand at the edge of the water. We look out, and what look like small waves, fun waves, are now huge waves because we're down closer to the water. So what looked like good is now looking like evil, but all they are is they're just the waves. And now we're paddling out, and we're paddling out in the water, and the water is murky, and we can't see the bottom. And the bottom is rock, and the bottom is reef, and the reef is what makes the waves. And as we get out to the spot where we love to sit, and wait for those huge double overhead waves to roll in. There's something that we know between us. There's something that we understand about the ocean. The ocean is good and the ocean is evil. And the ocean just is. And as the waves come in, they're beautiful and they're bold and they're dangerous. And they're beautiful and they're bold and they just are. And they are. And they are endlessly are. And if we can accept that they're evil and good in the same, then we can accept all that in ourselves, and that we can accept that in our relationship with all things around us. And so when things don't go exactly right, when they don't go exactly right, we know it's okay because they are going right. It's okay because it's both things at the same time.
Steve, tragedy affects us all at one point, at one stage of our life, either personally or we see it in others, and we all come to a personal demise that we may not recognize occurring and certainly can't look back, they say, and revisit. You have some thoughts about personal tragedy.
This goes back, I've had to figure it out in my own life, as a truth, to when I was 2 years old and my parents had to go into hiding because of their politics. This was the 50s. And they left Montana, where I was born, and went to Spokane to go underground for 6 weeks. And they left me with a dear friend of the family's. But I was only 2 years old, and all I knew was that my parents were suddenly both gone. And I had no idea why. No one had said anything to me. All I knew was they were gone and I was suddenly with these other people. And somehow that event has echoed forward in my life in a way that constantly repeats itself. In a way that I find myself alone, faced with a sense of where do I belong? A question hovers over where do I belong? My mom says when they came back to get me 6 weeks later, I didn't even recognize her. So this is perhaps one of those seminal events that makes an artist out of you. At any rate, tragedy does not diminish us. And that's what I've had to figure out for myself, is that tragedy does not diminish me. That tragedy, like 9/11 or Southeast Asia, does not diminish us. What tragedy does is what tragedy did to me. It opens up a door in the night and a way to look out. And it opens up something in my heart and a way to look out. And tragedy does not diminish me. Tragedy in the form of a saw blade whirring this summer that nearly took my finger off. And there I was, rushing to the hospital, and there I was in my old beat-up Volkswagen driving off the ranch. And my finger was hanging by a thread, and I was headed to the hospital. There I was in my old car, and I drove by the pool, and everybody, they didn't know what it meant when my car suddenly started honking, because my car suddenly starts honking by itself. And my car was honking, and everyone at the pool was waving, oh, hello, hi, happy, happy, happy. And no, 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 it was my car going, he's cut his finger, and he's going to the hospital. Thank God for my car, because my car got me to the hospital. And tragedy does not diminish me. It makes me realize how wonderful my car is. And then I had the pleasure of sitting in the ER with my finger hanging by a thread. And in came this doctor, who everybody knows is famous. And he had a heart of gold. And instead of putting me in the OR, he did me in the ER with an 18-gauge needle. And he pinned my finger back together because I told him I was a writer and I needed that finger. But like a lot of writers, I had no money. And he said, well, we'll take care of you. Nurse, 18-gauge needle. And he pinned my finger back together in the ER, not the OR, the ER. Tragedy, tragedy, tragedy does not diminish me. I met the doctor who had a heart of gold, and I had my finger back. And suddenly, I knew things about life that had been shut off, that had been darkness, that had been 6 weeks of nights without Mommy and Daddy. But I had seen something. I saw a doorway in the dark. And I know tragedy does not diminish me.
We're visiting today on Radio Curious with Steve Hellman, a spontaneous spoken word poet from Willits, California. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Steve, what was it that prompted you to do this kind of work? What pushed you into it?
It's a form of pure enjoyment for me. I also write, and I have a novel I'm looking for an agent for, and I've done a lot of journalism. I was a newspaper reporter for years. I've made a certain amount of money with my writing. There's a certain pleasure that I derive from being a writer in search of a market, so to speak. But this spontaneous spoken word work that I do is just for the pure enjoyment of it. I don't try to make anything of it other than what it is. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have those sort of things in their lives, the same kind of thing. Maybe you garden just because you love to garden. You're not gardening for any other reason, right?
I produce Radio Curious because I love to talk to people like you.
So they're not paying you, are they, Barry?
Not yet. But that's another story for another
right,
day.
Right,
right. Tell us more.
Well, I suppose the thing that I would like to say to the audience, in a way, is that we all have this kind of creative impulse in our lives, and it's just a matter of trusting in it. I think we tend to want to mold and model our lives day to day. We get into routine, habit, whatever it is. If we can make a place in our daily routine for something spontaneous, or something where we let go of the should and just become are, it's a thing, it's a health spirit. It's more when he talked about care of the soul. There's a nothingness in it. You enter a room and there's nothing there that's supposed to be there. It's just what it is. And I think that's what I've said over and over in these poems that I've done today, is there is a just is. And there is something in the creative process that's a just is. And it's okay to just is.
Can you give us something more spontaneously that might just maybe, perhaps?
A just is. My car of how many years, so rusty, metal fatigue, it just is. Okay, don't judge me by my car. My car is a Volkswagen. It was built in 1971 in Germany. And it just is, okay? It's rusted, decrepit. Don't judge me by my car. If you judge me by my car, you've made a mistake. You've put a should where there's just is. It just is my car, okay? I've kept it running for nearly 500,000 miles, okay? It just is a Volkswagen with 500,000 miles. What do you want to think of me when you see this car, all beat in and battered? It was a drunk that ran into it when it was parked on the street on 3rd Avenue in San Fran in 1989, and I was in college, and I needed the money, and so the insurance company gave me the money for the car, and I kept the money to get through school, but I didn't fix the car, but the car just is. So don't judge me by my rusted, beat-up, metal-fatigued old Volkswagen, because that would be a mistake.
Steve, I always love it when people come prepared for an interview with notes and they've written something down. Maybe not fully spontaneous, but what'd you bring?
Well, last night I was watching Joan of Arcadia on TV, and people that are familiar with that show know that she's a high school student who's visited regularly by God in the form of various different human beings. And in last night's episode, Joan had been having a pretty hard time in life, and God encouraged her to keep on keeping on in terms of figuring out what she was going to do with her future, because she couldn't decide if she wanted to be an interior decorator or go to college and pursue some kind of philosophical pursuits. And God finally said to her, look, I think you're stronger than you think. And Joan came around and said, I'm back in the game, and I will be making my own moves. And so those were a couple lines that I thought of, because today my buddy, my dear friend of many years, Rick Griggs, is still alive. This one goes out to Rick, Fort Collins, Colorado. Rick, buddy, black man, big bosom buddy. 49 years old, and the heart suddenly got a clog in it. And all that expertise on the slopes, and all that expertise in bed, and all that expertise on the bike, and all that expertise at living was suddenly just a thread, because of the clog in your heart. And all that expertise in your work suddenly out the door, because you were laying on a carpet in a lobby, in a hospital, telling these people, look, I think I'm having a heart attack. And finally they came and took you. And sure enough, they ran that instrument up your leg to your heart and figured out you had a clog, bro. You had a clog, man. It was cholesterol, and it almost took you. But you're alive today. You're alive because you made it where you needed to go. And I think you're stronger than you think. Stronger than you think, Rig. Bro, stronger than you think. Stronger. And you're back in the game. And you're making your own moves. And those moves are so much more acute at their balance and angle now that you're back from that near brush with death.
Well, Steve Hillman, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like you to tell us about the book that you brought that's here on your lap.
Yeah, this is Crazy Wisdom by Scoop Nisker, and it's published by 10 Speed Press in Berkeley. It's a wonderful book about different forms of wisdom, coyote wisdom, trickster wisdom, the wise fool wisdom, different ways of letting wisdom into our lives other than certain rational modes.
What are some of the forms of wisdom that you could tell us about that you have picked up and made yours?
Right. Well, I love this book because margins on nearly every page are these wild quotes. Like, here's one from Charlie Chaplin. In the end, everything is a gag. Which I find really cool, because really that's all his art was about, was the gag. And he reduces it down to that simplicity. Here's one from somebody, Jane Wagner. No matter how cynical you get, it is impossible to keep up. So, yeah, it's like a counter wisdom. It's like looking inside the question for the answer. It's like, here's Mahatma Gandhi. Everything we do is futile, but we must do it anyway. I think there's something really exciting about this when I realize how I struggle in my own life to make sense out of things, especially when they get difficult. And there is a wisdom in seeing that things sometimes run counter to what we really would wish they were.
So taking those three quotes, in the end, everything is a gag. No matter how cynical you get, it is impossible to keep up. Everything we do is futile, but we must do it anyway. Can you be spontaneous?
Right. And so we come to this final quote. If I could tell you what it meant, there would be no point in dancing it, Isadora Duncan. So if I have to tell you what it means to be a spontaneous spoken word poet, there is only one thing left to do, and that is to do it. And if we can't get through it to do it, then we can't get through it, right? Frank Zappa, you got to get through it to do it. Dynamo Hum. All right, I was coming down the road today, and the snow was coming out of the mountain, and the snow was coming sideways, and as it hit the windshield, it was melting. It wasn't snow anymore, it was just wet. And as I came down out of the snow into where the snow was just being wet, and all that wet was coming up through the cracks in my old Volkswagen, and the car was starting to float, and it was starting to feel wet inside. And as I got down to Ukiah, and I had all my errands to run, and I knew I'd be coming in here to Barry's place to check it out and be in the yurt at Radio Curious, there was a wetness in the air. There were tears in my heart. And there was wetness on the floor, and there's wetness on the floor right now. And all it is something frozen that came undone. It was something solid that went liquid. It was something totally, totally, totally other than what it was. And then suddenly it was just this right here, a little bit of moisture, a little bit of breath, a little bit of moisture and a little bit of breath, the sound of my voice in your ear, just a little bit of moisture and a little bit of breath.
Steve Hellman, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. Steve Hellman is a poet of the spontaneous spoken word who lives and speaks in Mendocino County, sometimes quite freely. The book that he recommends is Crazy Wisdom by Scoop Nesber. It's published by 10 Speed Press in Berkeley, California.
There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org. And I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.